Hey, if you've suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-322-HURT. That's 713-322-HURT. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
You could not live with your own failure. Where did that bring you? Back to me.
Welcome in Houston. John and Lance are out this week, and you know it can only mean one thing. It's the audition with Del Olale. Join Del all week as he auditions various sports radio talents in his relentless pursuit to find the perfect co-host. Now live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. It's Del Olale and his third audition, Josh Beard.
When the world was a sign with this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce.
Welcome into the final day of the audition. Del here with you. Josh, as the announcer told you, is here with you, here with us as well. And RJ, who's been here throughout, as he's kind of got us right as we, you know, close this thing out. It's been a good week. You guys, the people listening, I mean, have been a little contentious because you seem a little up in the air about what's going on. Well, I'll let you know that I accidentally called Lance this morning. Just on accident, because I had called RJ to get in the building. So before I put my phone back in the pocket, it, you know how that, how it works. We don't know the magic of the butt dial, but it occurred, and I immediately saw that it was Lance, and I actually made his contact trash ass Lance.
Yeah.
So that's
a good one.
So that, because I called him that consistently on the air, and I just put in my phone. So that's what I see anytime he texts or if I have to find his contact. So I hung up because there's no way I want to talk to him, and I just assumed he's in town. So it's really early for him until I got a surprise. He calls back and he's up and at him and bright, far more lucid than he is when he does this show. So I'm like, what's going on? And apparently he took a trip. I'm not going to tell you where it is because apparently he didn't want people to know from how he spoke about what he was going to do on vacation on his last day. He was like, oh, staycation. It's not a staycation.
Well, he's staying
somewhere. He's staying someplace on vacation.
Yeah, so that technically is a staycation, but if he's staying somewhere on a vacation.
But the implication of staycation is I'm sitting in my house.
It's not Lance's fault that everybody misinterpreted what he said.
Well, I think he clearly was being deceptive.
I'm going to do that from now. I'm going to say, why are you taking those days off? Why are you gone for a week? Ah, it's a staycation. And they just go very far away.
There's a running theme that one of them is not a man of the people, because John's the world traveler. He spent time in Spain. He goes Italy most recently. I think Spain was the most recent trip. So he's the world traveler, despite what he likes to position himself as the man of the people, just because he'll drink with you.
Yeah.
He still is spending time in exotic locations. I think Lance wanted to make it seem like he's not like that, but he clearly is. He's a foodie. He is now confirmed as a world traveler. I'm not going to tell you where he went, but they're both fake is what I'm telling you. So he calls back and he wants to have a conversation. He wants to speak about La Liga soccer. And I said, no, we're not going to do that. No one wants to hear about like a mid-table team from Spain playing in a match that mattered to them. But he's alive. I'm really just letting you guys know he's alive. He doesn't seem too bitter about his, what you guys think is a firing or a suspension. He appears just fine.
You said you weren't going to tell us where he was, but you just said that he was very passionate about talking about La Liga.
No, he always talks about soccer. Oh,
well, but specifically La Liga right now, this morning?
I don't know why. I don't know. He roots for Everton. I can't speak to his rationale
exactly
about anything.
Exactly. So why does he want to talk about a soccer league from Spain?
Because he talks about soccer all the time. Not on the show because John won't allow it, but he does talk to me about soccer all the time. Just random things about soccer. I don't care.
Do you do that thing where you just put him on speakerphone and like set the phone down somewhere and walk away and do all of the other stuff you would normally do around your house?
There's no need for that because it's generally a text. There are rarely calls unless he wants Dolphins information. Like he'll call me about potential, like before the draft, he calls because he goes to LA sometimes. or he'll do it from here, like a Path to the Draft podcast or show. And he'll ask me, what do you think the Dolphins' three biggest needs are? Like, isn't that your job?
Yeah.
Why are you asking me about what the Dolphins need? And I'll tell him maybe they'll look for a corner or a linebacker or whatever it might be. And then he takes that on to the show, and I get no credit for it.
Zero credit.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, look at all this homework I did on the Dolphins.
Yes, this is a man who once used my picks to win a lot of money in a March Madness pool. And didn't acknowledge that he won the money until later, where he let it slip that he had a couple Final Four teams, and they're my teams.
Wow.
That I picked. And then eventually he came through. He got me some Game of Thrones Adidas shoes.
Oh, that's sick.
So that was nice, but it took like a year.
Like, well, you know, maybe the shipping was just really bad. You never know. Nah, maybe it just took a while.
Nah, he just got shamed into doing something. So that's what that is. So he's okay. I don't know where John is, but you guys, we know it's Memorial Day, so they won't be back on Monday, but they should be back on Tuesday, I think, unless there's some inter-office strike that I don't know about.
Unless the everyman Lance decides to go somewhere else, somewhere in the world.
Yeah, maybe Bora Bora. Like, if I get a call about a Bora Bora soccer game, then that's probably where he is. But you are actually spending your weekend, not necessarily exotic, unless you consider Austin exotic. But,
some parts,
but
yeah.
you are going to your brother's wedding.
Yes, yeah.
And we talked about it before the show, about how it's like, when that Evite hits or that save the date hits, depending on who's sending it and where you have to go, it can be a burden. I am one who, when I see it, I'm like, oh, how much do I like you before I decide if I'm gonna go or not? Now it's your brother, you're in the wedding, so there's no real avoidance. But obligatory travel and the money you're spending on obligatory travel is one of the worst things anyone could put on you, because it's obligatory. You can really not say no. And this one you're probably okay with, but there are other times when, and I have to admit, there are very few times when I'm okay with it.
Same. I mean, I've been to a bunch of weddings. I've been in a couple of weddings, and every single time I'm just like, I don't know. I think there's like five people total in the entire world that I'm okay traveling for. I think it's my wife, both of my kids, my dad, and then my brother. That's it. Those are the five people. So luckily, he lucked out. He's one of the five in my circle of I'll travel for you because I care about you enough. Everybody else, I'm just like, I guess. But I don't want to do it. It's begrudging. It's really – I'm excited to see my brother get married. He's my little brother. I honestly never thought he would get married. But I was a little afraid when he told me he was like, hey, I'm going to propose to her. And he asked me to be his groomsman. And I was like, okay, his best friend's going to be his best man. Makes sense. They've been best friends since forever. But I was a little concerned because my brother, his fiance and soon-to-be wife, is an Instagram influencer.
Oh.
And her family owns hotels, and they travel across the world, and she does, like, sponsorships for hotels and travel things and clothes and stuff like that. So they go on free trips to Bali. They go on free trips to Costa Rica and stuff like that. So I was like, I swear to God, if this is a destination wedding. And then when he told me, he's like, no, it's going to be at Austin. We're going to do it at a hotel there. We're going to have the rehearsal and the rehearsal, or we're going to have the rehearsal dinner at our house. So I was like, oh my God, thank God.
So when I hear Instagram influencer, there are things that you immediately think. Did you have thoughts when you – did you know what she did before you met – before
I knew she
they were close, or you kind of found out about her?
I found out that she that aspect of her career after I met her. Before, I knew she worked at Facebook or Meta or whatever it's called now. So she works there, but then she does that on the side. And afterwards, I was like, oh, this is – she's like, oh, I do Instagram influencing type stuff too. I'm like, oh, she probably got like – I got like 1,000 followers on Instagram. It's fine. She's trying to create something that's cool. She's got like 20 or 30,000 followers and like legitimately gets paid to
for
do these
things.
Yeah, for sponsorships and gets free stuff. I'm pretty sure the Christmas presents that she gave my wife and my daughter were just straight up sponsorship stuff, which is genius because it's stuff that there's no world where I would have been willing to afford to buy it for them. So, yeah, she spoils my brother. She spoils my wife and my kids, and so she's awesome. I'm a very big fan of her.
Well, when you can bring someone into the family that you don't have to support for any reason, it's awesome.
Yeah,
when you don't have to worry about it. So, where are they gonna live?
They just bought a house in Austin.
Okay, so yeah, they're not too far away.
They're super bougie. I think the house that they bought was just like it's like a $650,000 house. Not super huge, but it's right in downtown Austin. And then there's me, and I'm like, my brother and I are very different people. He went the route of I'm going to work a career that pays me a lot of money. I chose radio after I got out of the military. We all know how that goes. And so he's made a lot of money. He decided to wait to get married so he could save that money and go on cool trips and do awesome things. I got married when I was 20, and I had my kids. I'm 36 now, almost 37. My oldest kid is 14 years old. So
high school.
We've lived completely, vastly different lives.
He's like, you know, I won't say carefree because I don't know him, but
it's very carefree.
But
yeah.
Just the type of responsibilities you've dealt with since you were about 18, 19, and what he has done, it's like. He's like, Josh, what are you doing?
Yeah, I was 19 years old, joined the military, got married at 20, had kids at 20, at 23, and he is just now getting married, and he's 30. And so it's like, it's funny to, I went to New Orleans for his bachelor party, another expense in travel that I had to do, and they're all just getting just wasted. Out on Bourbon Street, they're all drinking, they're all like, yeah, I'm going to spend $400 at the bar. And I'm like, all right, let me pull out my calculator and see if this fits the budget for the month. Like, okay, we have to pay the car payment. I can have 2.5 drinks. Okay, I'm good to go for tonight.
He's like, What's with the kids thing, man?
Yeah,
You and your responsibilities. Yeah.
That's the hard part is whenever you're with a group of guys like that, and they're like, what's with this whole kids thing? I literally had one of them ask me that exact question. What's with the whole kids thing? I'm like, I don't know. We had them.
It was a biological imperative. I don't know.
Yeah, we didn't mean to at the time. We wanted to in the future, but it was a little earlier than we planned on.
And
like,
we
love
them
me?
Dearly.
Yeah.
What do you want from us?
Yeah, I love them mostly.
So Josh has some obligatory travel, but at least it's for his brother, and he and they're welcoming apparently a delightful person into the family, which it's not always the case.
I like her better than my brother, so
it makes sense. She's supporting your children and your wife with gifts. I would like her better than a brother too. He's not doing that, so welcome to the Beard family, a new person. What's her name?
Her name is Thea.
Okay, welcome Thea to the Beard family. That's very nice. Weddings are for me. Please don't invite me. Please, if it's not necessary.
I'm inviting you to my daughter's wedding now.
Yeah.
I'm going to invite you to any wedding where I have the power to invite you now.
That e-vite will go unread. Actually, I'll read it, and I'll be like, Josh, thanks, but I'm busy. I don't even know when the wedding is, but I'm
going to
be busy.
I am currently going to start renewing my vows with my wife, and I'm inviting you to that, and you have to go.
I'm busy.
You don't know when it is yet.
I'm a busy man. Okay. I'm a busy man.
I'll get you there.
We'll see about that.
I always get the yes.
Okay. Yeah, this is going to be a test for you because I don't say yes to anything, including a marriage. That ain't going to happen. That'll wrap up the first segment as I dove a little deep into my personal life. But the Astros did not play today, but we will hear – last night, but we'll hear from Joe Espada. He has some things to say about everyone's favorite, Jose Abreu, because he's very positive about what happens next for Jose Abreu, unlike the rest of us. So Joe Espada coming up. We'll also hear from – Andy Reid and the Kelce brothers. The Chiefs have been saying a lot on one particular issue. For whatever reason, they're cutting through the noise when it comes to that. And we talked a lot of college football, at least a little bit of college football, and coaches and how I don't like Mario Cristobal and Josh doesn't particularly care for Jimbo Fisher. Well, it's May, so their rankings for college football coaches, we'll get into that as well. And Jimbo's surprisingly high, even after what happened last year, still ranked relatively high. So we got that and more in the audition. Dell, RJ, Josh, we'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Partially functional. Half of me is comfortable. The other half is close to the cliff, like Mrs. Huxtable. These boys got them hosted.
You know what? He actually had a pretty good series. I saw him in walking. I'm starting to see a few more walks. He's starting to chase a little bit less. He's starting to get his hits. I do believe that the track record speaks for himself, guys. I still think that this guy is going to hit. He is very positive in the clubhouse. He trusts his process. And I think it's just it's early in the season. I know, sometimes our, people, our fans really want to see him hit the home runs and do the things that we are used to seeing on Jose Abreu. But I think it's just a matter of time, guys. He's going to click. This guy's been a really good hitter for a very long time. And I think it's a matter of days, of weeks, that we're going to see Jose just get hot and carry our ball club for a while.
Let's get back to the audition with Del Olale and the guy who's still auditioning, Josh Beard. Will he get the part? Only Del knows that answer. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del and auditioner Josh Beard.
In the middle of that, Josh was shaking his head up and down in a strong affirmative, like he was getting the job.
100%. I talked to so many people yesterday. I talked to my wife. She said I did a great job. I talked to both of my kids. They said I did a great job. My mother-in-law said I did a great job. So I have it on very good authority that I was just absolutely on fire yesterday.
If all your references are people that are family, I don't know how that plays in a business situation.
That's the only references you should use. They know you better than anybody else. Why would I use anyone other than, like, if I apply for a job, why would I just use, for instance, why would I use you or RJ over my daughter who spends every day with me?
Because she doesn't work with you.
To be honest, she's pretty flexible in working with me at home. So,
okay.
You don't think that's a good reference?
No, it's probably the worst one. It's the worst one.
All right, I'll get some more. I'll reach out. I'll find a couple of cousins and some grandparents.
I would think, what's her name again?
Thea.
Thea probably a better reference than your daughter.
I'll ask Thea.
I'll send her the tape. About what you've done.
Yeah.
That was Joe Espada, Astros bench coach, talking about Jose Abreu and his performance in a series against the Brewers. I mean, yeah, the hits were there, the singles. He went 4-4-13 in the series, which isn't terrible, but it's more of the same. No power, no RBIs. So, and he hasn't had an RBI since the Cup series.
Yeah,
and that was a couple Wednesdays ago. So, I guess he's hitting better because he's not striking out as often and he's making contact.
Oh, yay!
But of course, he struck out in a big moment in the series. On Tuesday,
yeah.
when the Astros were trying to get back in it. So, yeah, you want your bench coach to be positive about him. But he hits with power. I'm not even asking for it consistently. Just do it once.
Yeah, just literally.
So there's a spark. Once. You think, okay, you can delude yourself into thinking there's something there. But sometimes age gets a baseball player and they're done. I was talking about this earlier in the week. Like, baseball is the one sport where you can be really good one year.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden become terrible. Like, you're never going to see Kevin Durant until he just stops playing. You're never going to see him become Corey Brewer one year after being a really good player.
Right.
Cody Bellinger did that, where he was an MVP candidate and then he couldn't hit a baseball. I don't know what that is. I've tried to figure it out. Is it pitchers just figuring it out, the scouting report, you have to adjust? But it's the only sport in the world where you can be the best at it and then a year later you can be one of the worst. And Jose Abreu was pretty good last year and he's been a major disappointment this year.
I think a lot of it comes down to speaking as one old guy to another old guy. My reaction time in various different things in my life isn't even close to what it was whenever I was in my 20s and my early 30s. Like, there was a moment when I was about 35, 30, early 36, where, and a lot of this comes from me playing video games, so it's not the same thing as hitting a baseball, but I feel like that would be, I don't know, even harder than playing a video game. But my reaction time, and I actually went and tested this with a couple of different games where it can test almost like that S1 cognition test. It can test your reaction time on things, and it's markedly slower than it used to be, way slower than it used to be. And I think that's what it comes down to with some of these guys with hitting. It's just there's a point in your life where you cannot recognize and react as fast as you could before, and I feel like that drops off, just a minimal marginal drop off in that reaction time. Whenever you're playing a game like baseball where you have to read and react faster than pretty much any other sport, I feel like that has a lot to do with it. It's also weird with baseball where you can see a guy go from superstar status to garbage the next year, no injuries, and then superstar status again the year after that. Like, you never see that in football. You never see that in basketball. But in baseball, you can see a guy go from, holy crap, he's incredible, to, oh my God, what happened, to, oh my God, he's incredible again. And then you don't know what's going to happen after that. There's so much inconsistency with players. But here's my thing with Abreu. I'm in the middle, leaning towards the negative side with Abreu, and a lot of it has to do with ROI, right? But ROI has been a big topic over the last week and a half here at the station. But we'll talk about Jose Abreu's ROI this time.
Is it worse than Jake's?
As of right now, yeah, actually, yeah, because
it's kind of hard to get there. I know, you're worse than Jake when it comes to ROI.
And for me to say that on this show, John and Lance might not be happy with me, but what you want from Abreu is a guy who's going to produce at a really high level and hit with some semblance of power. And we've gotten none of that. And we haven't even gotten consistency but with him getting on base, with him being able to get hits, with him getting RBI. That's a problem for me. And I look, would I love for him to figure it out and get right and turn it on at some point? Yeah, but we're 49 games into the Astros season right now, and I just don't know how much he can turn it around, how much he can turn it on. And it's a problem for a team that was really hoping that he could be a big piece that they could just plug into the lineup and make something happen.
Yeah, with the absence of Brantley and others struggling, and you know, we had the first month or two without Altuve. We'll see if he's back in the lineup tonight. Abreu was the big offseason addition as far as bats, and it hasn't played out the way anyone would want it. And when the bench coach is parsing, man, he's walking a couple more times, not striking out as much contact. It's still 222 and with the batting average, and even worse in the power numbers. It's like, all right,
yeah,
we're gonna go on blind faith.
I had somebody bring up to me, like, oh, if you look at Abreu and Bregman's numbers, they're really, really similar.
That doesn't make me feel good,
but,
by the way.
Just looks at batting average guy. Because if you look at Bregman's numbers overall, he's at least doing enough to obviously we want better numbers from him. And I think he has been doing a lot better lately, but he's been doing more to contribute to these wins and to these games than Abreu has. By and large, even though their batting averages are very similar.
Yeah, those two, and we'd like to see Pena pick it up. Yeah, look, he had a great postseason, yeah. But he's still a young player, so the ups and downs for him are fine. And we talk about ROI. He's already – I don't know what he could do poorly this year that would make me go, you know what? I'm a little miffed at him considering what he did in the postseason.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much he could do that would make me turn on him. The new guy who's getting paid a lot, who was brought in by the former Astro, which and felt like in the complete opposite way of what they've done in the past. All those things have combined to make Jose Abreu a lightning point, or lightning rod for criticism.
Yeah.
And the whole not hitting thing isn't helping either.
Yeah. There is a large part of me, and maybe I'm a little off on this, but there's a large part of me that would have rather have stuck with Trey Mancini. Ooh. Than be saddled with Jose Abreu.
Have you forgotten the Mancini episodes?
I have not. I know. And if it weren't for one amazing stop in the postseason, he would have been an absolute nothing burger in the history of the Astros. But that one stop at first base. But there's a part of me that would have rather stuck with that because of the guy that Trey Mancini is.
And to be honest, he's having a nice year.
He's having a pretty good year.
So to your point, it would have been better off to keep Trey Mancini. He wasn't great here, but what is it? He went to Chicago and he's fine. Abreu came from Chicago and he stinks.
Yeah.
It's not a great exchange program we have going on with the city of Chicago. And particularly when Granato came from there, too.
Yeah, I feel like there's a Granato connection in there. That's what I was trying to figure out. It's something John's doing.
Yeah, it's a rough one. Mancini was, as you mentioned, pretty much a nothing here. And then he leaves and
he's fine.
He's fine. In fact, he would be at, I don't know what pace he's outpacing Abreu, but is he lapping him four or five times?
Yeah.
Whatever it might be. He's Max Verstappen. Look at me crossing sports. He's an F1. He's the F1 racer to the guy in the go-kart. And well, that's Jose Abreu.
And to see Yuli playing so well this year, too. That, I mean, there's just so much about this Jose Abreu situation that just stings so much. To have him playing the way he is and it have both Mancini and Yuli having really good seasons outside of the team, it's hard to watch.
I think the Yuli thing is worse for me because he was one of our own.
He means so much to this fan base to this city, to those championship teams. I mean, that one definitely hurts more, but I just want to bring you to figure it out. I want them to help him try to figure out what's going on so he can fix it, because I'll just sit in a darkened room listening to old 80s emo music. I'll just listen to the Smiths for like an entire day in a dark room if I have to deal with the Brady situation.
You reach back
anymore.
Into the 80s. I'm more of a My Chemical Romance if I'm going to get into the emo stuff.
That's whenever I'm feeling a little sad. And okay. Then when I'm feeling a little more sad, I go back another decade to the 90s.
Okay.
But if you ever hear me listen to the Smiths, you need to check on me. You need to do a wellness check on Josh if he's listening to the Smiths, because something's wrong.
I'm trying to think of the last time I've listened to a Smiths song and not been sad.
Yeah, it's impossible.
No.
I actually wanted to put it on my brother during his bachelor party to bring it back a little bit. He's like, "Oh, why don't you pick a song? Because we're drinking, we're partying, we're listening to music." He's like, "Why don't you put it on a song?" And I put it on the Smiths, not thinking about it, and it literally ruined the entire vibe.
Of course it did. You guys are drinking and hanging out. Oh, you put on the Smiths.
Everybody was having so much fun. I think we were listening to Panama by Van Halen before that. And I'm like, hey, let's put it on the Smiths. And then everybody's instantly sad.
You're
I'm like,
terrible.
My bad, guys.
Terrible DJ. The vibes are all off once you
do
that.
Not a good DJ.
Well, different professions for different people. Mm-hmm. And you probably have chosen the right one. Because if that's your choice, you get run out of Vegas really quickly. That would be – I don't want to be a DJ, but that feels like a dream. Because all you do is play music, beats per minute, and – you can be a millionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love that. I just play the Smiths for everybody all the time.
You would not be a millionaire.
Wedding Smiths. Yeah. Last dance at a wedding, first dance, and last dance at a wedding, the Smiths.
Yeah, you would be in the second phase of the Wedding Singer movie where Adam Sandler's completely depressed.
Yeah.
You would be his personal DJ. And
singing
you would get,
Love Stinks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be you at a wedding. That's a poor way to get a party started. I'm still thinking of you playing a Smith at the Smiths at a bachelor party.
It was a bad move.
Yeah.
Party foul.
Congratulations to you on that. That'll wrap up the segment for the audition. A couple more things we want to get to. I think the Abreu talk is done because it took us to a depressing spot. Something a little less depressing, Patrick Beverley criticizing Chris Paul. I love when Chris Paul gets criticized, and Patrick Beverley has been at the forefront of that for the last couple of years. So we'll hear from him once and maybe Future Rocket if we believe what he has said over the last week. So he'll tell you who's dirty and who's the dirtiest player in the NBA. I think you kind of know who he's going to name. The audition, Dell, Josh, RJ, we'll be back.
ESPN 97.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the audition with Del Olale and the guy vying to be his sidekick, Josh Beard.
Chris Paul.
Chris Paul? The cone?
But it's like it's a shock when you say it in front of like people who's not in the basketball world, but when you say it in front of like basketball players and referees, even referees. Oh, okay, yeah, that doesn't surprise, you know?
And what does dirty come down to? Is it like yanking on your arm while you're going for a rebound?
Yeah,
is it like tweaking your knee when somebody's on the bench like George Niang did?
Yeah, or like you go for a layup, push in the back. Or like you go for a loose ball, grab on your knee. Like I would never grab on another player's knee. But to answer your question, that's the answer I have.
Chris Paul.
The story isn't what Patrick Beverley said. It's whoever the hell his co-host is. Do we have a name for him? Because the reaction is what all I heard. After his reaction to the initial statement by Patrick Beverley, I didn't hear another word.
Here, Eddie, can you play that, just the beginning again one more time, that laugh? Oh, that's on
Chris Paul.
Chris Paul?
The problem is, I think he got caught being fake.
that's on par with the Kawhi Leonard laugh.
But I don't think it's real.
No,
He's up there and Patrick Beverley says something, so he feels like it's his spot to react. It's on the level of the fake media laughs where a player who's not all that funny or a coach who's not all that funny says something and they don't want a pregnant pause because the real reaction is to let that sit, but no one likes to sit in silence and be uncomfortable. So then that comes out.
Say something funny to me real fast. We'll demo it for everybody. No. Say something funny.
No, I'm not going. There, that's enough.
Dell, you kill me.
That was uncomfortable. I mean, the Chris Paul, you and that guy.
Both of them?
The Chris Paul thing, hey. The Chris Paul thing is expected. What came out of it from, I don't know his name. I just know the podcast is done with Barstool Sports, whoever he is. That wasn't a great moment for him.
That's awful. It's, you know what? Kind of a legend, though. I will never forget that laugh for the rest of my life. I'll just remember, hey, there's one time I was listening to Pat Bev's podcast, and this guy laughed real weird. It's going to be like 30 years from now. I'm going to tell my kids about it.
Okay, it's the Pat Bev podcast with Roan. So whoever Roan is, that's the guy who was up. Chris Paul, stop, man. You don't have to. You've been working with Patrick Beverly for a while. You ain't gotta give all that extra. Just react or not. But it's probably a story he's heard before. I think he got caught being fake. And it happened.
You know what?
And I think, was that Patrick Beverly with the was that him? Okay, they're both being fake. Okay, that's what that is.
I'm not gonna lie. Like, I'm a little hurt that, like, I wish you did that for me sometimes.
Be fake?
Well, I mean, like, just like a little pick me up, right? Just laugh at one of my jokes.
Well, be fine. Hey, RJ, every time
that feels good.
Every time he says something that he thinks is funny and I won't respond, you can play that, and that'll be his pick me up. Okay. All right, we have something for you.
Hey, sometimes it be like that.
No,
RJ, what are you
doing? You gotta warn him.
I know.
Gotta warn him.
Sorry, that's my bad. That's on me.
So. I mean, the context, or at least the content of that clip, I don't think anyone is surprised that Patrick Beverly would name Chris Paul as his dirtiest player. Although Patrick Beverly mentioned he wouldn't ever grab at anyone's knee, but he would two-hand shove someone in the back when they're not looking.
Yeah.
He'll do that. Or he will be ultra hustle guy, and when there's obviously a timeout going to be called at the half court line, run up and try to steal it and then blow out Russell Westbrook's knee.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't call that dirty. I would just call that unnecessary, because we all know someone's going to call a timeout. The likelihood of you getting a steal in that situation is very low. And then it led to a knee injury for Russell Westbrook. And as you might think, as you might imagine, Russell Westbrook has never forgiven him for it.
No, I would you?
No.
No, there's no, like, I feel like whenever these guys, especially at the NBA level, but whenever you play basketball in general, at all of the different levels of basketball, there's unspoken rules that, like, you just don't cross those lines. And if you become one of those guys who crosses those lines, you guys are going to remember it, and you're going to get labeled forever. I think Patrick Beverly has done that multiple times in the NBA. I think Grayson Allen, to me, is the dirtiest player in the NBA. But he's a guy who's crossed that line. Markieff Morris has crossed that line multiple times.
Oh, Jokic. I mean, in the same game, in the same instance where Markieff reacted to Jokic. I think he on a non-call, he hit Bam Adebayo on a putback, hit him right across the face, and it was in the middle of a blowout. So he took his shot at Jokic, foul. Maybe it would have been called a flagrant. Might have been called a flagrant. But as Morris is walking away, Jokic just rams him in the back with his shoulder. Mm-hmm. I think from whiplash and a back injury, Morris missed over 60 games in a season. So while when the incident occurred, everyone's like, "Well, that's just him responding to Morris and his physicality."
That's dirty.
And then it turned into something where a guy nearly missed an entire year. So that's the danger you face when you do that. Well, Beverly tried something a little less physical, but it wound up hurting Russell Westbrook. And as I said, those two have had an issue ever since. But yeah, the Grayson Allen one, I would agree. But with what you're saying, he's probably, as far as the kicking and the tripping and the hard fouls, up there on the list. But when you're a nut puncher, like Chris Paul is,
that's true.
Takes you to another level.
That's true. I didn't even think about that. I forgot. He's done that multiple times.
Yes, he tried to end the line of Julius Hodge. Yeah. He tried to keep Julius Hodge from having kids in college.
I think there's been instances where Grayson Allen's done that too before. Grayson Allen is anything goes if it's below the waist. And I just don't like, look, I think taking a junk shot on somebody is bad, but in my opinion, going after people's ankles and especially their knees, where that could be career-ending, that could be life-changing types of injuries and surgeries, that's why Grayson Allen gets vaulted to the top of the list for me.
Yeah, the tripping thing is...
That's bad.
It is something that players won't tolerate, because we know the legs are very important to their careers, and if you do something that they're not expecting and a tweak here or a tear there, and you're changing the trajectory of someone's career because of something you did that was unnecessary. So, he's high up there. It's almost like when we talk about the concussion issue in the NFL, a player would probably rather get concussed as far as when it comes to their current career. What happens afterwards, that's a different story, but than a knee injury. Because right. concussion, you're out at most, unless it's a succession of concussions. You're probably out for sometimes not even a week. Like Kenny Pickett had a concussion and then missed a game. And I think it happened to T. Higgins as well, where he was knocked out of a game and then played in the next one. So concussions, you whether it's because of poor evaluations, you can get right back in a game or at least a week later. A knee injury, that changes your career, certainly changes your season. So don't mess with a player's legs, and Grayson Allen has been one to do that. But don't mess with my gene pool either, Chris Paul.
Yeah, that's fair. It's interesting that some of the guys that get ACL tears, especially when you get them late in the season, that can not just ruin the current season. It can ruin the next season too, like Kyler Murray. But Tua Tagovailoa, we all thought he was dead. And he came back, 3 weeks? He was only out for 3 weeks? He came back 4 weeks
later? In
fact,
he was only hospitalized because of the whiplash.
Yeah.
It wasn't because of the concussion. He went to the hospital and was out of the hospital by the time the flight was ready to go. So he took the flight home with the team, and then he had another concussion later, so against Green Bay, which knocked him out for the rest of the year, and now he's wearing a safer helmet and, you know, the stuff about the jiu-jitsu trying to fall better. Because apparently when he got hurt against Mississippi State the first time, he suffered a concussion there and the hip thing. And it kind of changed his body mechanics, so he had to try to fix that. Because, you know, if you've watched the footage of him and his concussions, it's these full-on
back of the head.
Yeah, no bracing or at all. Yeah. It's just him being snapped back, which was the awful effect of it. It wasn't even really contact by the player, like a head-to-head thing. It's just a full-on no brace back of the head. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to avoid that with the helmet and the whole trying to fall in a correct way. So Patrick Beverly and your co-host, kudos to you. Because Roan, if that's your name and I'm pronouncing it right, you're the star of that clip, not Pat Bev, although he had a funny laugh in there too. Can we play it again? Because notice how Pat Bev sounds on stage as well. What is that? I don't know if that's better than your Paul impression, but it's pretty good.
It's a pretty good Pat Bev's
laughing on stage impression.
Definitely not better than Paul, though. Paul takes effort, though. That one doesn't take any effort.
No. It's stop it. It was an entire bleep show by the both of them. But the information, pretty obvious. But I would rank Paul, Pat Bev, and then Grayson Allen if we're talking about dirty. Because Patrick Beverly, I guess if you are, you should know what you see. He should know what he's looking at because he's just that guy, just less talented.
Yeah.
And we're trying to figure out if there is a bigger separation between talent and accomplishments for people having a rivalry, although Chris Paul wouldn't call it a rivalry. You never acknowledge the guy who's below you.
Right.
I can't think of it in another sport where there's a, let's just say, a scrappy dude who's made his career by being that guy, but continuously takes shots at all-time greats. I can't think of one in any sport.
I can't either.
Because in sports, it's usually like the scrappy, talkative, I made this. I did it my own way.
Yeah.
Doesn't generally go after the top guy because you can never win that battle. But I was talking about it during the break. But every athlete has a podcast, so you have a voice. So you don't depend on the media to push your narratives. You can do it yourself. But I can't think of one with that disparity of accomplishment and talent, and this back and forth. It's not even a back and forth. It's just going one way.
Yeah, I can't. Other than like. Some of these guys that don't matter in the MLB talking trash about the Astros constantly because of 2017, those are the only examples that I can think of at all, where it's like guys who don't matter talking crap about dudes who are at the top of the league and at the top of their game.
Yeah, it'd be like Scott Zolak having an issue with Dan Marino.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like what? What are we doing? What? I can't think of anything that similar. And I guess credit to Pat Bev. He's got a podcast and he's made his way, so when he's not playing for the Rockets, he can do his podcast with Roan and laugh and joke and talk about who's dirty. But you guys are the same guy, except one of you is way more talented than the other.
Would you take Roan's place on the Pat Bev podcast?
Not if I had to laugh
like
that. No.
Okay, I'm that was going to be my question.
I cut you off before you got there. Not if I had to laugh like that. There are some. I'm sure the Barstool check is a big one, or at least certainly bigger than this, but
I can't tell
you, some dignity.
No, I can't tell you how fast I would say. I don't care how you want me to laugh. And any singular way you want me to laugh, I'm doing it. Well, dignity does
there's
not
a
matter.
Word for that.
Yeah.
Same word.
Sellout?
It's the same word that John called the Wheelhouse's moms.
Oh, totally fine with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I'm not even going to deny it.
That's what you are. But hey, acknowledge it. Or we can just call you a sex worker. I think that's what we call people now.
Yes.
We don't call them that other word. We call them sex workers.
Yeah. Pay me whatever you have to pay me. I will do anything.
You should.
On Pat Ben's podcast.
You should get an OnlyFans.
I think there's a couple of communities I'd be pretty popular in.
You want to name them?
No. Well, not even a little bit.
Well, like, I guess when you have your secret OnlyFans, you can tell your followers what you will and won't do and what the communities are that would love what you do. I guess. This is a great time to publicize it. You can't have a secret OnlyFans.
I don't
make any money.
I don't have a secret OnlyFans.
Well, you apparently are willing to do a lot.
Yeah, for money on the Pat Bev podcast.
Well, good luck. I think Ron has that spot taken.
I can't beat that laugh.
He laughs like Pat Bev is the funniest person on the face of the earth, so it's going to be hard to take him out. We're going to talk a little bit more basketball in a different way because there actually was an NBA game last night. I don't know, maybe for the first 4 minutes of it. Then it just became a runaway as the Celtics go win another one. Now they're down 3-2, so they're two games away from doing something that's never been done in NBA history before. They do have to go win one in Miami. And we'll probably talk a little bit about what it would mean for the Celtics to get it done and what it might mean for the Heat if they allow the Celtics to do it. A lot of legacies would get affected if a 3-0 hole was overcome by the Celtics and if a 3-0 lead was blown by the Miami Heat. We'll talk about that and more on the audition. Dell, Josh, RJ, we'll be back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 on terrestrial radio or our app or our stream or our Twitch or our boat.
I'm on a boat. I'm on a boat. Everybody look at me because I'm sailing on a boat.
You're on the ESPN 97.5 boat.
I'm the king of the world on a boat like Leo. If you own the show, then you show not me. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We just got to play better, start the games off better on the starters, make it more difficult for them. They're in a rhythm since the beginning of the game, but we're always going to stay positive, knowing that we can and we will win this series, and we'll just have to close it out at home.
The audition continues on ESPN 97.5. Listen as these guys suck up to Dell for a chance at stardom. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Dell and today's suck-up, Josh Beard.
And that was Jimmy Butler of the Miami Heat. Miami Heat lose 110-97 to the Celtics, so that series is now Miami up 3-2, and the talk will begin in earnest as the discussions will ramp up about what it would mean and can the Celtics do it. They're now one win away from hosting a Game 7 after being down 0-3 in the series, and Jimmy Butler talked about starting the game early. That wasn't a problem. Starting the game better. That wasn't a problem in game three. They're up at the half, 56. They're up by six, I believe, in that one. And yesterday was a different story. The Celtics ended that quarter up 35-10. It started early. You know, they're feeling each other out. It's 5-5, missed shots, couple missed free throws. And then the Celtics go on a run where they hit, I think, in a span of maybe five made shots, four threes in a row.
Yeah.
And by the time you look up, it's 20-5, and the Heat never recovered. Kevin Love was out of the game, didn't play really much until garbage time after that. He's one of their starters. Gabe Vincent, we talked about yesterday, did not play. Kyle Lowry doesn't bring the same type of energy or type of defense or the type of shooting anymore. He's more of a, depending on how that knee is feeling, type of guy. He can give you something if he's feeling all right, and other times he's a negative player, and he was that last night. Jimmy talked about the Heat starters. They were terrible last night, and it was mostly because of that early run and their lack of shooting. So if you're a Heat fan, you're probably a little – I was talking about bubble guts about something yesterday. You're probably feeling that a little bit now because now you lose game four at home, and it's like, oh, we had a shot. But, you know, we're still up 3-1. We've won in Boston before. Then a Gabe Vincent news hits. Oh, we're down a starter. And then you go up there, and we're never in the game. And now you're like, man, if we don't win game six at home, can we win this thing? And you know what? Can they be the first to blow a 0-3 lead? Well, they're halfway there.
Well, I think a lot of the Gabe Vincent being out really showed with how much freedom Derek White had to work last night. I mean, it's hard to beat a team whenever any team whenever four of their starters are over 20 points. They had four guys in 20 points or more. Derek White was 6-for-8 from three, I believe. So yeah, 6-for-8 from three. Marcus Smart was 4-for-6 from three. So missing that guard defender in Gabe Vincent was a much bigger deal for the Heat than I thought it was going to be, and it really did just come down to the math. It came down to they just made more threes. They had more opportunities for three. They made more of them, and that was the biggest difference maker. But the fact that you had this is where I think it's difficult for the Celtics is they've made an adjustment. It's been working for them, but Eric Spoelstra is not a guy to just sit back and watch a team continue to dominate him. He's going to also make his own adjustments. I think we have an idea of what he's going to be able to do going into game six and the adjustment that he can make to try to fight that Celtics small ball lineup. And if they can stop some of those threes, they can get some fast breaks and they can get the ball in Jimmy's hands or in Duncan's hands, somebody's that can do something with it. I think they're going to be fine. They only need one more, and the Celtics have to take two more. They have to win four in a row. Winning four in a row in the NBA playoffs is
extremely difficult.
It's not easy.
Particularly when you're fighting uphill. I think the adjustment is what we saw to start the second half, where Kevin Love didn't come out with the starters. He only played 5 minutes in the first three quarters. I expect you would see Haywood Highsmith. I think Eric Spoelstra will try to keep Caleb Martin as part of his bench unit, and whether Gabe Vincent plays or not, I think you'll see Haywood Highsmith taking the Kevin Love spot because he's a smaller player, can defend guards.
Yep.
And
15 points last night.
And kudos to him for shooting the ball well. Yep. So he should feel pretty confident going into a game six. So starting better certainly would help. And limiting the Celtics threes, you talked about it. And I took a screenshot at the end of the third quarter of the box score and how the math was working out. The Heat were shooting over 54% from the field at the end of third quarter, and yet they're down by 18 points. And it's frankly pretty simple. They only took 14 threes, made six. The Celtics had made made 14. So the Celtics were over 48% from three and had made 14. And that was the difference in that quarter, and that was the difference through three quarters, and that was the difference in the game.
Yep.
Plus the Heat in their live ball turnovers, they were terrible taking care of the ball. Bam Adebayo had, I think, six turnovers himself by the end of the night. He didn't play in the fourth quarter, and Jimmy Butler played a couple minutes, and then when he saw there was no ground to be gained, they took him out. So those two should be well-rested for game six because the last two fourth quarters they've barely played in. So if the Celtics are going to continue to make 14 threes through three quarters, then the Heat aren't going to win this series because the Heat, although they can shoot the ball well, they shot the ball well in game three, and then the percentages at least were good in game five. They just don't take enough threes to match what the Celtics are putting out there.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a thing we lived through in this town where the Rockets played the math game. You can get all the twos you want, but we're going to get free throws and three-point shots up, and if we make enough of them, there's no way your math is going to beat our math. So that is the game that's being played. Joe Mazzulla follows that mindset as well. He wants his team to take a lot of threes, and right now they're hot. That wasn't the case in the first couple games of the series. And so if the adjustment is the Heat go small and maybe limit some of the driving lanes, don't have to help off as much because you have guys that can stay in front of Celtics shooters and drivers,
yep,
that can maybe change what goes on. You look at the first quarter, 35-20, and the rest of the way, it was kind of a middling game. I mean, the Celtics did get up to maybe about 22 at one point, but the end of quarters, into the second quarter, they're up by 17, into the third quarter, they're up by 18, and then garbage time remained after that. So it was the first quarter that killed the Heat, and the question is, now that it's been like, let's say, three quarters of the Celtics blowing them out of the water from the end of the game,
yeah,
from the beginning of the second half of game four to the first quarter of game five. Have they figured something out, and has that momentum slowed? We'll find out in game six. Because let me ask you, because everyone thinks the pressure's on the Heat to win game six, and maybe it is, but I don't know if players react that way. They'll just say, hey, we won in Boston twice, so we can go do it again.
Yeah.
I just think it's their best opportunity to win, but I'm not sure there's more pressure on them to win.
I don't think there is. If I were a player going into this situation, I'd be pissed off that I gave up the last two games. But I would still be like, nah, we just have to win one. They still have to beat us twice. That's not going to happen. We're too good for them to beat us twice. So I think the pressure is and should still be on the Celtics. I think it's a great storyline that everybody wants to latch on to. National media is talking about it. It's like, can they overcome the 3-0 deficit? That's what, and I get it. Like, that's a storyline that has to be brought up. You have to talk about it because the potential of it happening is too great. And if it did happen, it would be too huge. So you have to set it up, right, in case that happens. But it's really hard to do. And so the pressure should still absolutely be on the Celtics because you're not going to always get the opportunity to shoot 16 more threes than the team that you're going against in the playoffs. I have to imagine, I mean, both teams, like if you look at the numbers, again, the math, if you look at the numbers, they had the same, almost the exact same amount of shots from the field. They had the exact same three-point percentage, or close enough, is a 2% difference. But there were 16 more threes on the Celtics side because of turnovers and other things that happened in the game, rebounding. And that's not going to happen every single game. So the Celtics have, I don't want to say they've gotten lucky. They've just been able to take advantage of certain situations so far. But if the Heat go small ball lineup, and they have Highsmith in there, and they have the ability to bounce back and forth between a man and a zone to where they can rotate to those shooters and cut off those shots and force them into the lane, force them to make twos and cut them off there, then that's a huge game changer for the Heat. And I think the pressure is on the Celtics to continue keeping Miami guessing with what they're going to do next.
The shooting variances came in 4 and 5, but this was always a thought going into the series. How many times can the Celtics shoot at this level and combine with their talent win this series? And people thought it would come earlier. It just has come in a situation where now there's a narrative about can they win 4 in a row? Mm-hmm. But if we were, and I don't like doing it because it's different now, but, you know, everyone would say this was going to be a long series, and now we have a long series. It's just that the way we got there is not expected. Right. So we'll have a game 6 on Saturday night on TNT. We'll see if the Nuggets know who they'll be playing by Saturday night, or will they have to wait till Monday with a trip back to Boston for what could be an epic collapse or a Heat team who makes history of their own being another 8 seed. That's getting lost, by the way. It was, we were one game away from an 8 seed making it to the finals again. Yeah. Now we're a couple games away if they lose from blowing a 3-0 lead, which has never been done. And I talked about it before we went to break. I know we got to go. How it affects legacy. Jimmy Butler has the playoff Jimmy moniker now because of what he's done. By the way, people overplay underplay how good of a player he is in the regular season. It's just that his usage goes up in the playoffs and they ask him to do more, and they've kind of managed what he is in the regular season. But he's a really good player in the regular season. He just becomes this world crusher in the playoffs. If the world crushing Jimmy Butler loses 4 in a row, and does something unprecedented, the playoff Jimmy stuff will go away, and then the slander will come back.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Not that he's going to care. I would just tell everyone, just look at it. If they don't win this series, pay attention to how he's talked about, as opposed to how he was talked about before a potential blown 3-0 lead. So we'll see how that plays out. We'll find out if we get a game 7 by about 10 o'clock on Saturday night. So. That'll be another fun one as the Nuggets still await their opponent. That'll wrap up the first hour of the audition. Josh in with me and RJ as well. We got plenty more to talk about. Some NFL stuff to discuss as the Chiefs have done a lot of talking, the Kelce brothers, in their podcast. Some of you may listen to it, but we'll play some sound from that. And also we'll hear from Andy Reid on a particular rule that maybe the Chiefs don't know exists already in college football. They're acting like it's brand new. Maybe you don't know about it as well. We'll discuss it on the other side.
ESPN 97.5.